Well, welcome everybody. Glad that you're here tonight. And this topic is on sexuality and Christian marriage. And it's a great topic. I'm glad that you're here. And I don't know how you feel about being here. If you're worried that I'm going to call on you and ask you questions, so I'll just deal with that right now. Okay, let's start with you. No. I am not going. This is. You can ask me questions. I will not ask you questions, nor will I ask you to raise your hand or anything like that. Okay. So let's just put that question. Let's just put that aside. Okay. All right. We're going to talk about an important part of marriage that sometimes is uncomfortable for people, and I hope to make it as comfortable as possible. Okay. And it's a great topic because this is a topic that God created. And so one of the things we want to do is we want to just start by looking at an outline and looking at the big picture about God's thoughts about this topic. So we're going to look at biblical foundations for marriage, marital sexuality. Then we're going to look at protecting sexuality and living the core four. It's one of my favorites. Sexual personalities, fantasy, intentional rekindling, and talking about sex. And so to get started, we need to start with biblical foundations for marital sexuality. It's wonderful when you kind of step back and say, what did God's design start out being? When you do that, you come to a conclusion that is really, really beautiful. When you look at this topic through the lens of sexual brokenness, okay, when you look at through the lens of sin, when you look through the lens of culture, lens of abuse, all different kinds of things, you get all different kinds of pictures. Okay, so we wanted to start back and go, how did God design this? How did God design for us to experience this? So let's look at it. So first of all, God designed it. He's the creator of sexuality. And notice something about this, and this is really basic, right? Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image, in the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. Sexuality, our genders, were created before the fall. Very important. This is not random accident. This is creation here. That's a beautiful thing. He said, what about it? It's good. The one flesh design, also, before the fall, okay? A beautiful thing that there was going to be leaving father and mother and cleaving unto his wife, and they shall be what? One flesh. Beautiful. All right? That procreation was a part of the design for marital sexuality. Be fruitful and multiply. And then the concept here of mutuality and the concept that it's each for the other. Beautiful a picture here. And you see that throughout the scriptures as it talks about marriage. But 1 Corinthians 7:3-5, let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence or kindness. And we're talking about bodies here and talking about what we give and the concept of us giving kindness, thinking about how we give to the other. Okay? And likewise also, the wife unto the husband, the wife hath not power over her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not. That means don't deprive one the other, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer to come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency, your lack of self-control. The concept that we see here is this mutuality. Okay? That we're supposed to be looking out for the benefit of each other. Okay? It's a beautiful picture. Next, God created sexuality pleasurable. And oftentimes when you read the scriptures, particularly when you think of some of the things in the Proverbs, but also Song of Solomon, and you know, it's like when the minister opens up to some of those, you're like, oh man, you know. But if you look at this language, okay, Proverbs 5:18-19, let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the loving hind in the pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times and be thou ravished always with her love. That word ravished literally has a connotation of being intoxicated with her love. Okay, this is very vivid, passionate language. Is God surprised about our sexuality? Is he surprised about pleasure? Is he surprised? No. He designed it so. Okay? Another thing. No shame. He designed sexuality. His goal was that would be with no shame. That in Genesis 2:25, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. That there wouldn't have to be fear. That there wouldn't have to be insecurity. That there wouldn't have to be shame or things like that. Now, obviously, in a fallen world and as human beings, we have lots of different things that go on. But go back to, what are we looking at? God's design. We're looking at that he created. He created it good. He created it mutual. He created it pleasurable. He created it safe for us. Okay? And lastly here, boundaries to protect sexuality. Hebrews 13:4 says, marriage and honorable and the bed undefiled, but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. He pronounced some things in and some things out for sexuality. Okay? It's and the reason for that is because he knew how powerful the sexuality is. So we're going to look now at the first of the five sections, and it's called Protecting Sexuality and Living the Core Four. All right. So I want to start with this picture. This picture you'll see here. You have the inbounds. This is inbound biblical marriage. Here's the core four: oneness, honor and respect, mutuality, and no shame. And then here's the fence right here. And these are the things that God says are outside. And you can just go through the scripture and find these things: lust, fornication, incest, obscenity, prostitution, the homosexuality, the things that are going to be violations of something. What we find here is each of these things on the outside, okay, they cause harm to God's design. Now, they happen, and God can forgive them and all those different things. But if you see what's on the outside, he said, this is going to harm this. He said, what's on the inside is good for this. So let's look at it closer. The core four, and this is when I work with couples, we work with them and they're trying to, whether it's young couples or older couples, and they're trying to work on their sexual relationship. Maybe they're trying to figure out kind of what things are comfortable for both of them or whatever. And one of the things we do is we say, these four things provide you with principles. The Bible doesn't talk a lot about the specifics of you shall do this or you shall not do that or, you know, things like that in specificity for any one couple. But these principles are beautiful guides. The first one is mutuality. Either spouse can initiate sexual intimacy, okay? But they agree together to any sexual behavior, okay? So neither spouse then feels controlled, coerced, or forced. And each spouse feels the desire to be a blessing to the other one, to meet the other one's need. So if you think about this concept of mutuality, it is husband trying to meet wife's need, wife trying to meet husband's need. Both have the option to say yes, both have the option to say no, and there's none of this stuff, forced, coerced, okay? Think about in the news, right? How many things go on? Think about what hits the paper, what hits the thing. You have things like forced, coerced, okay? You have things like without permission, no mutuality, without the safety of that. And then look at what God does. He says mutuality. He says, because in your marriage together, you can feel safe in each other's arms. Next, oneness. God designed sexuality to help, okay, with that, the sexual bonding. And it bonds the couple's marriage and strengthens their sense of we. Okay? Now, you and I, we're brothers and sisters in Christ. Okay? You and I, we have, we're Americans, we're a part of this church body, but you know what? We're all not married to each other. Okay? There's a very small we there. Okay? And God wants the relationship to be special and specific. Okay? We don't share some things with just anybody. Well, what happens is that sense of oneness where the two are made what? One flesh. Okay? That is kind of like two become one, kind of that thing. They experience God's design for sexual intermarriage because it strengthens that sense of we. This is we. Okay? We did that. Okay? We're together. Okay? And it's a beautiful thing. Honor and respect. Each spouse feels prized by the other, and the best interests of the other spouse are always kept in mind. So it's like this. If you think about the world's model for sex, it is, what can I get? How can I get satisfaction? How can I get? What can I get? If you think about pornography, it is what can I get? If you think of it, and so what you have here, if you flip it around, this model says, I want to honor and respect you. I want to treat you like the precious gift that you are. Okay? So each spouse takes seriously the opportunity to prepare himself or herself to be sexual in terms of hygiene, in terms of time, preparation. The concept is this. The reality is the sexual relationship can get lost in busyness. It can get lost in stress, raising kids, you know. I mean, stress, other things. I mean, it's kind of one of those things that the prioritization to make sure that I'm aware of your needs, okay? Those kind of things. And so it's showing respect and honor to the other one. And then lastly, that no shame. The couple enjoys their sexual relationship and they can experience pleasure without either of the spouses feeling shame. And that is because neither is put in the position of having to experience something that they're not a part of, or that they wouldn't that they haven't given permission for. So there's just four beautiful things. So in any couple, when they're trying to decide on a sexual behavior, okay, you look at that graph and you go, okay, first of all, we have to be inside the fence, okay? Inside the fence. Things outside the fence are not okay. So we got to be inside the fence. But once we're inside the fence, the question is it mutual? Okay? Does it promote oneness? Do we feel closer and connected with this? Do we each feel honored and respected? And is there no shame? And if you can answer those four questions about a sexual behavior and in the affirmative, that we're in a good place, then you're in a good place. Isn't that beautiful? So let's next thing, we're going to talk about sexual personalities. Okay, sexual personalities. Now most people think about their personalities, you know, we've got introverts and extroverts and things like that. So sexual personalities, what is this? What I'm going to do now from here on out, you're going to see the beginning slide is a consider slide. And then there's going to be an unhealthy way to deal with that thing and then a healthy way to deal with that thing. So the first thing, let's consider sexual personality. So you have personality, and most people know that, just about the way they live life, they see the world, solve problems, some are orderly, some are, you know, extroverted, introverted, all those things. But you can also look at how your personality and life experiences impact your sexuality. So some of the ways that sexual personality manifests include some people prefer more predictability. Some people prefer more variety. Some are very planful about things. Some like things very spontaneous. Some are very cautious. Some adventurous. Some are very high on verbal expressiveness, like to talk, like to share. You know, others, you know, others less so. Okay? And so these are just some of the ways that people vary on personality and the way they view sexuality. Okay, so in an unhealthy sense, in an unhealthy way, one of the things we don't want to do, it's very easy to do, by the way, is to expect your spouse to have the same sexual personality as you. Okay? Well, I like it this way, so you should like it this way. That's just how it goes. I mean, why not? That makes perfect sense, doesn't it? But that's not how it works. I mean, it can, but at the same time, one of the things you have to be aware of is just because something feels natural and seems completely natural to you doesn't mean it's going to be the thing that does to your spouse. Another unhealthy way to deal with this is to guilt or coerce a spouse into sexual behavior that makes them feel uncomfortable. If they're not comfortable with something, okay, putting guilt and pressure on that, okay, isn't helpful. All right? It's kind of like this. We can under working with couples in terms of in their sexual relationship, we look at things that are things that put the brakes on sexuality, like, okay, or accelerators. What helps that to grow? Feeling guilt, okay, breaks. Feeling coerced, breaks. Okay? All right? Next one. Expecting your spouse to always adapt to your preferences and sexual personality. It is in the sexual relationship, it is a give and a take relationship, okay? It's back and forth, okay? It is trying to meet both people's needs, and they're not necessarily always the same, okay? So we're trying to meet husband's needs, meet wife's needs, and yes, there's give and take in this relationship. But it's kind of like this. Sometimes it's really easy to say, boy, I'm very comfortable with the idea of you adapting to me. I feel really good about that. Okay? But the flip side to this is, remember that concept? Is that honor says, I want to also seek to adapt to you. I want to make sure that you feel comfortable. I want to go to the places that are the things that open up your heart. Neglecting to observe and learn about your spouse's sexual personality. Again, sometimes just, we don't even mean anything by it sometimes. Sometimes we don't notice and we're not very good observers, okay? So, but sometimes it's just being kind of neglectful. It's just kind of being selfish. So I think one of the things about it, and we're going to talk about this particularly in the area of communication, is why it's so important for spouses to be able to have the opportunity to talk about those things. Lastly, comparing your spouse's personality to secular sinful models of sexuality. The fact is that you comparing, okay, your spouse to somebody you read about in a fantasy novel, or somebody you watched on a movie someplace, okay, is not only unfair, okay, it's actually doing that thing of putting pressure on them in a place that is a break, okay? And particularly, too, because this is how, I'm going to just give you a little caricature about how Hollywood thinks sexuality goes, particularly female sexuality, okay? That this guy can be a complete blockhead, okay, not really attentive to his needs, but this lady is a caged panther, and she's ready to be sexual right now. Okay, I don't know about how many of you like that fits. Maybe you can just go from, you know, folding laundry to going straight from laundry right to the bedroom, and you're ready for a party. Okay, I don't know. I mean, hey, listen, different things are accelerators to different people. Laundry, however, changing diapers, however, tend to not be accelerators for people. Okay, and so, but Hollywood misses that. They don't talk about the need to be able to help bring people along and the fact that we have to meet needs back and forth. Okay? All right, so let's look at some things about healthy things. So number one, pay attention to learning about the things your spouse especially enjoys and doesn't, and respond appropriately. Make those mental notes. Okay? I want to encourage you to be a student of your spouse. Be a student of your spouse. You need a PhD in your spouse. What they like, what they don't like, what they need, how they need to be encouraged, and when we're talking about sexuality, the things that they like, the things that are harder for them, more uncomfortable for them, whatever. Okay? Particularly if your spouse has some kind of history that makes it hard. So if somebody has a sexual abuse history, and maybe sexuality is a hard place, you have to have some sensitivity, or there's been some sexual dysfunction or some kind of thing, or a health condition, whatever those things are. What a place to be able to minister to one another and to be able to help one another. Pay attention. Another one. View it as a privilege to serve your spouse by bringing them pleasure and or comfort by pursuing their preferences. View it as a privilege to be able to bring your spouse pleasure. Think about that. It's a privilege. It's my privilege to bring you pleasure. What a special thing. Okay? And then remember this, that the sexual relationship is one of blessing each other through giving and receiving. Okay? And it's that mutuality. Sometimes we're giving, sometimes receiving. It's kind of like a sideways figure eight. You know, you give in, you receive, you give, receive. It's beautiful. All right, next. Let's talk about fantasy. We're on the third section here. Let's kind of think about this topic of fantasy. So first thing to remember is sexual thoughts and fantasies are part of being human. All right? They're just part of being human. They're part of being a human being. All right? I work with lots of Christian people. At the counseling center, we see it particularly in the singles, okay, who are doing a good job. They want to be sexually pure. They don't want to be in the weeds with sexual stuff. But one of the things that they do is they treat their life as if they were supposed to be able to have zero sexual thoughts, zero sexual feelings, zero anything until after they were married. And then it was just going to start right then. Well, wow. You know, I don't know why it isn't that way, but I will tell you it isn't that way. Okay? We're sexual beings. Okay? We have sexual thoughts. Now, the concept is to remember here is that the mind is actually the most important sexual organ. Okay? Because the mind here is actually the gateway, accelerator, or brake. All right? So here's the catch. Sexual fantasy left unchecked can lead to sin and distortion of God's design. Okay? So fantasy is one of those things. It's a little bit, and sexuality in general, but I'm just talking about fantasy. Fantasy is a lot like fire. Okay? Fire in the right place can cook your steak, it can heat your home, it can heat your water. Okay? It can be very useful, it can be very helpful. Fire in the wrong place can burn your house down. Fantasy is the same way. Okay? What I want to encourage you is that the two extremes are to let fantasy be unchecked. The other extreme is to shame yourself over and over for having, you know, for just having a sexual thought or whatever. We have to curb them and move them. But think of it this way. Don't think of a white bear. Okay? Just don't think of a white bear. All right? Keep the picture of a white bear out of your mind. And particularly, do not think of a white bear sitting next to a red ball, because that would be really bad. Especially if it's a red ball, that is the worst. What happens when you keep telling yourself, don't think of a white bear, don't think of a white bear, don't think of a white bear, don't think of a white bear? Boy, it's really bad to think of white bears. Okay? Your brain literally has to hold the picture of the white bear right here in order to remind you not to think of the white bear. Okay? Telling yourself, don't think of that, 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 don't think of that. Okay? What we'd rather do, what I'd rather encourage you to do, is when you have errant sexual thoughts, our goal is to move on down the road. Okay? It is to fill our minds with the things that are good and pure, and to let things float and pass. And I know that it doesn't happen automatically. But I want to highlight here, and this is something that a lot of Christian people don't hear much, and that is sexual fantasy in line with God's design can help couples. It can help you build anticipation and bless your sexual relationship. So it's inside the boundaries, right? We want to stay inside the bounds. But here's the thing. One of the things that we know is that for people to kind of move from being busy with life and stressful and those kind of things, and to shift, oftentimes they need to have help shifting in their minds. Okay? All right? Now, let's talk about some unhealthy ways that fantasy can be used, and this is unhealthy. So it's using sinful means, like porn, to supercharge a sex life, because it's a distortion of God's design. That's not helpful. Another one is comparing your spouse to sexual fantasies that he or she can't live up to. Okay, it's kind of like the concept is I'm not good with math. Okay, and if Donna expected me to be excellent with managing finances and accounting. Okay? If she expected that out of me, and she kept, you know, 25 years that we've been married, if she kept giving me that message that you're not living up to who you're supposed to be, you're not living up to who you're supposed to be, you should be doing better at this, you should be doing this, I'm not going to be able to live up to it. Okay? I can't. I would, even if I tried, I just, you know, I mean, I can add and subtract, don't get me wrong. I mean, I can make it through life, okay? But the concept here is, think about the pressure that you receive by getting the message, you're not good enough. Or I'd love you if. Well, you're okay, but I'd really like you if. Okay? Break, right? Last one. Asking your spouse to participate in or accept sexual ideas and fantasies that fall outside of the sexual boundaries, okay, that God has given or that violate the core four. Okay? Asking your spouse to participate in thinking about fantasies that violate things on those sexual boundaries, that's, again, it's God's design. We want to respect God's design. So let's talk about how this can be done in a healthy way. So first of all, in the context of a healthy marital relationship, sharing sexual thoughts and fantasies can help to build positive anticipation for sexual intimacy. And that's going to be different for different couples. But the concept is that we help by talking to each other. Okay? All right? We talk. Okay? And healthy fantasy can help one or both spouses transition from the daily grind of life to becoming more open to sexual intimacy. And I want to make this, and this is not always true, but there are stereotypes, you know, that it's always the men are like this and always the women like this. I can guarantee you that for every stereotype that it's always men who and always women too, there's exceptions to that. I can just tell you that it's just true, as true as true as true. But I wanted to say this, it is often common because of how the female sexual drive is tied to emotional intimacy and connection. Okay? All right? For guys, we have, and I would say that it's not necessarily a healthy thing, but we have the ability to disconnect our sexual drive from emotional connection. Okay? That's why pornography can be so, and sexual temptation can be such an issue. Okay? But the flip side is, it's not that, and ladies, don't misunderstand me. We need emotions. Okay, we need emotional connection. Even if your husband isn't good at saying it, okay, isn't, maybe he is, maybe he isn't, but he needs to feel that here. But it's very important for, particularly for women, but can be for men too, to start thinking about sexual intimacy prior to the act of sex. Okay, there's a book out. It was called, you know, Sex Begins in the Kitchen. Okay, and the whole thing was it just, you got to kind of help prime it. Prime each other, and I will tell you that and we'll talk about this a little bit more in the communication section. But oftentimes couples don't communicate their intentions or their hopes. Okay, or is tonight tonight? Is tonight the night? You know, that kind of a thing. And if you look, surveys show this without a doubt. Initiating sex and communication misfires happen all the time. Okay? You know, it's the guy is like, oh, yep, tonight's tonight. Oh, yep, I got the signal. Yep, oh, tonight's tonight. And they're thinking, boy, I tell you what, they got, the thoughts are going. And he said, yep, I see that. She, And he is down the runway. The jets are firing. He is launching into space. And his wife finally hits the bed and she goes, oh, finally. And wants to go to sleep. And he's going, what? You've been giving me all these signals. The signals. Okay? And you know what? It's more like that a lot of couples are communicating in kind of this code and sign language. And, and again, I understand that if you've got the kids around and you want to, like, I can get that. I can get that you don't want to have this conversation in front of the kids necessarily. But the concept being that sometimes the more ambiguous, okay, the more miscommunications and misfires. So the concept there, you know, talking about previous reminders of positive sexual encounters that you've had together can help to kindle sexual thoughts. I'll remember when we were. Remember that? Okay. Another one is fantasizing about a time or a situation in the future that you would both find conducive to sexual intimacy. Okay. Maybe this is a vacation coming up, or a dream vacation for that matter. Okay. That's the nice thing about being together and being in that part of the sexual moving towards sexuality where you're cuddling, kissing, and talking and things of that nature, that it costs you no money to fantasize together. It doesn't cost you $5,000 a plane ticket to go to that place. Okay? But it helps to kind of kindle your minds. Okay? So let's talk about intentional rekindling. Intentional rekindling. Let's consider, first of all, every couple experiences time where their sex life is more or less vibrant or on the back burner. Okay, that happens. It comes, you know, there's times when it kind of goes like this. All right. The busyness of life, stress, fatigue, parenting, work can all compete with sexual intimacy. All right. One of the number one things that competes against the sexual relationship for young parents with young kids is just the energy crisis. Okay? It's just energy. Right? Yes, I'd like to do that someday when I feel energy. Okay? All right? Now, that's not to say that it's a bad deal to have kids. It is said that you must be intentional, and you must be intentional about making sure that you are prioritizing this. Remember that thing? It says to not be apart for too long, okay, except by consent for prayer. That Satan tempt you not with your incontinency. He says, come on, dude, keep coming back together. So he warns against that because he knows the benefits of the connectedness, and he knows the challenge of disconnectedness. So here's some unhealthy things about this: not being aware of your spouse's emotional and sexual needs. You know what? You may be busy and stressed. Okay? You know, husbands, you may have a lot on your mind about work and about this, that, and the other thing. Okay? We do. And sometimes, thinking about, just because I'm feeling stressed and I'm not feeling like thinking about this, I'm not feeling about being emotionally intimate, or okay, can lead us to not being aware of the need for connection. Wives, the same thing in the converse. All right? Sometimes wives can, and this can go both ways. I say wives, but it can go both ways. But we have to be careful about looking at it and going, oh, you are, this is such a, treating it like it is a burden. Either way. Okay? Using ungodly means like pornography, sexual novels, very popular lately. A lot of things going that way that move you away from your spouse sexually instead of turning you toward your spouse. One of the things you'll hear us talking about in different things, and I think Caleb Byer will talk about it tomorrow. But our goal is to turn toward each other, okay? To keep turning toward each other. And this sexual garbage that's out there, and by the way, when I say sexual garbage, I don't mean that it's not exciting. I'm not saying it's not tempting. I'm not saying that it wouldn't be exhilarating. I'm saying that it's garbage. And the concept is it doesn't turn you toward each other. It doesn't turn you towards the safety of the relationship. Our natural flesh craves to go like that. But what ends up happening? Okay? It's like thinking you're having a steak and you're really eating sand. Okay? It's the pleasure of what? Sin for a season. Okay? Believing you can just wait until life slows down someday to make time for sexual intimacy or make time for your marriage. Okay? You know how it is. Well, you know, the fall is so busy. Just wait till winter. Well, winter, you know, everybody's gone. You got through holidays and stuff. Well, just wait till spring. You know, oh, you know, spring, you know, with graduation, Mother's Day, and Father's Day, you got all this, that, and the garden, this, that, and the other thing. Oh, so summer, you know? Okay? This is about prioritization. And lastly, allowing sexuality to become only an act of releasing physical tension and not a true connection of emotional intimacy. Now, I want to be clear about what I'm saying here. I understand fully that sometimes one of the other spouses is more interested in the other, and sometimes one spouse is a participant to be a blessing to the other one. Okay? You know, to meet the other one's needs. They're not as interested in themselves. I get that. Okay? I'm talking about it that what Satan would love to see in marriages is that sex just be just an act of friction with no connection. There's no heart. There's no connecting together. Okay? Now, so just understand that in all these things, one of the things that you'll find is if you move toward each other inside the core four, you're good. Okay? Let's look at some healthy things here. So first of all, make time for your sex life, even if that means you need to think creatively about your schedule. Okay? Well, some people are like, well, you know what? I can look at my schedule and you know what? There's just, I guess there'll be, the kids are all this age, I guess we'll have time when they're age 18 and they move out. I'm encouraging you to think differently about that. Okay? Mm-hmm. Think about it. And you might have to think creatively. Another one is be intentional about creating some special times. And I said, I said monthly, but I'm not trying to say that it has to be monthly, and I'm not saying to say that you got to do it. But it's a kind of thing to, every once in a while, to fire up passion in the bedroom. Spend some extra time together. Think about it. Take some time together. Date each other. Think about it. Build up to it. Now, it's supposed to be a time of focused attention on each other, not a time of increased pressure. It's not like, okay, this is our once a month where you are going to perform. Okay? All right? That's not what this is about. Okay? This is about thinking about prizing each other and spending some time together. You know what? Getting away every now and then to focus on your marriage and enjoy your sexual relationship. It's nice to be able to get away and to just focus on each other. Another one is recognize that while sometimes your sexual relationship can be spontaneous, other times you need to plan. You need to plan. And so, spontaneity is fine if spontaneity works, but sometimes spontaneity is a bad option because we have to think about what's going on in life. And then lastly, think about what opens your spouse's heart and then act on it. When you think about what are the things that help to be able to open her heart, to open her sense of willingness to be sexual. So, you know, and that may be some combination of romance or communication. Even thinking about from the perspective of who initiates sex and how. And again, there's no right or wrong to this. It's not like you have to go every other. Okay, I did, you did. Okay, you know, Tuesday, 9 o'clock. Okay, I initiated. I get the point. Okay? This is not what we're trying to do. At the same time, when it's a busy season of your life, look and say, you know, hey, what can we do here? Another thing is, and we're going to talk about the communication segment next, but I just want to say also, sometimes if somebody asks us, hey, are you open to being sexual, or however you refer to it, the thing is, if the other person is not in a good place with it, you know what, I love you, but right now I'm not in a good space with that, then say, you know, hey, when can we work that, you know, when can we work that in? Just, and because yeah, not every time is the best time for both people, but to commit together to getting there, okay? talking about sex. Okay? So let's talk about consider. First of all, couples vary widely in terms about how much they talk about sex. Okay? Just like your families of origin, some of them may have never mentioned sex, some may have talked about it. Now, I had the interesting experience of my dad was the 8th grade health teacher in Morton, and so my dad taught every kid in Morton sex ed for, like 30 years, okay? So that was unique. And yes, we did talk about sex at home. But that was a unique experience. Okay? But the other thing is, spouses can miss an opportunity to share with each other about how they're feeling about their sexual relationship. You know, one of the reasons is because we don't like to get turned down. Okay? We don't like to be vulnerable or sometimes we don't like to disappoint somebody. Okay? So there's those different things that can happen. So practicing good communication and being vulnerable about sexuality helps everybody stay connected. It's about being connected. So here's some unhealthy. First of all, please don't talk about your sex life indiscriminately with others. Okay? This is one of those things that's special to you. It's yours. Okay? And you know what? I tell you what, to banter, and again, I know that there's variations in how open people feel and things like that, but you know what? One thing that I know, okay? I don't know what Donna's doing right now, but I can sure tell you that no matter if she's of the 100 people or whether she's with her good friends, I know she's not talking bad about me. Okay? I just know that. Okay? I don't even wonder. Okay? I don't wonder when she's with some of her girlfriends and they're talking if my sexual performance is on the topic. Okay? I don't have to wonder. It's so an issue, and I have absolute trust that is safety there. So the concept is, I'm going to talk about when you should talk about it, but indiscriminately is just letting your private details just be out for fodder, and I just really want to caution you against that, because you know what the fact is, we have a very the openness about sexuality and just different things. Sometimes, because people haven't had a chance to talk about it, if somebody will talk about it, they're glad to talk about it. Okay? But then they don't think about what it means in terms of exposing their spouse or putting that spouse in a bad spot. Okay? Another one, drifting apart due to lack of communication about sexual needs, fears, barriers, you know, that's unhealthy. So first of all, fear of initiating and expressing sexual interest. That's a pretty common one. It's kind of like, well, I would like to, but trying to read between the lines. You know what? Let's talk. Okay? And the way to get over the fear of initiating is to have the discussion about it. And I'm going to talk about a way to do that. Actually, I'll do it right now. Here's one of the things that I would encourage. Here's a little initiation. Thing that you do is to say to your spouse, hey, I was wondering how open you are feeling to being sexual. And then the two of you use a 1 to 9 scale, okay? Where 1 is, it's completely, you know what, I'm not there. 9 is, let's hit the sack, okay? Okay, and 5 is, I could be convinced, okay, you know, and so as the expressor, what you're doing is just saying, hey, I just wanted you to know that I'm interested. Where are you at in this interest scale? And then as a receiver, in hearing that, okay, wherever you're at on that scale, you receive it with grace, and you say, thanks for asking, okay, just thanks for asking. You know, and if it's not right now, you say, honey, I love you. And right now I'm not in a place where I'm just not in a good place with that tonight. You know what? Maybe tomorrow night. Or, hey, you know, and then come up with a, an opportunity. When can we do this together? If you're in the middle, you know, hey, I could be convinced. Are you, you know, I could be convinced, so convince me. Okay? All right? Now, I do want to say something about this. So if both of you are at nines, you just go deal with that, okay? But here's the thing. If you're high on the meter, okay, and your spouse is low on the meter, okay, which happens, all right, let me tell you something that doesn't help. Whining and guilting. Okay? How many of you feel turned on by whining and guilting? Boy, here I thought you loved me. Thanks a lot. After all I do. Does that make it anybody's collar high? Okay? Well, fine, I'll just turn over here myself and read my book. You know, does that help anybody turn on? No. Okay? So, you know, just remember something too. There's two ways that people can look at sexuality, two errors, and then there's a middle. One is that sex is God. The other is sex is gross. Okay? So one is pushing sex away. The other is sex is my greatest need. Okay? And what we want to come to is a place that it is a beautiful thing, and it's got its right place in the marital relationship. But we want to just honor it right in that spot. You know, not expressing a desire, not sharing that something. Here's another thing that's unhealthy: not sharing that something makes you feel uncomfortable. Okay, I want to encourage you to express. If you're not comfortable with something, say so. Say so. It's okay. Another one, critiquing your spouse, especially during or right after sex. Okay? All right? It's not time. I mean, there is a time to have discussions and there's a time to not. Okay? This isn't like the Olympics that after somebody does a dive and they say, 9.8. This is not what the sexual relationship is like. Okay? You know? And then lastly, avoiding dealing with a sexual hurdle. Shame and embarrassment. Shame and embarrassment. You get a lot of people. Okay? With a sexual issue, concern, question, whether individual or as a couple. I can just tell you, I'll tell you this. The counselors at ACCFS, we are talking about this topic with people regularly. Okay? I can guarantee you, if you have a question about marital sexuality or individual sexuality, and you're like embarrassed to talk about it, I can guarantee you, okay? I can guarantee you, you cannot embarrass us. Okay? It's a dare. Okay? It's a dare. So let's go to this next thing. So let's talk about the healthy way to do it. First of all, make time. Make time to talk about what is working well for the two of you sexually and what areas you would like to work on together. You might say, hey, you know what? I'd like to try that 1-9 thing. I think that could help us. Okay? Or, hey, you know what? This thing of our kids getting older and we're staying up later and then can we talk about this? Or, you know what? I'm feeling like I don't like this, or I need some of this, whatever. Another one is read a high-quality book on marital sexuality. Today, there are solid Christian books on the topic, okay? And because there are, I want to encourage you, generally speaking, avoid the secular reading on the topic. There's enough good Christian literature out there. The reason I say generally speaking is I'm sure that there's an exception out there because somebody has a condition that there's a book or whatever. But the concept is this. In the Christian worldview, outside of the Christian worldview, you got a very different set of rules. Okay? Another one. Talk to your physician about your sexual health as needed. Okay? Medications, certain conditions can affect sexual desire. Somebody might have sexual pain, sexual functioning issues. Seek counsel, overcome sexual hurdles. Again, it's very, I just want you to know it's an open topic. So last thing, this is some questions for reflection. Ask yourself, is sex something I'm giving to my spouse or withholding? Okay? Another one, is sex something I am demanding or offering? Okay? Is sex something I am using as a tool of manipulation or as an expression of generous love? And then lastly, if God looked at nothing other than my sexuality, would I be known as a mature Christian or as a near pagan? And I want you to think about it. It is in this, God just gives us the neat opportunity to love one another, to experience this. He's created it. He called it good. And it's a beautiful thing to share together.